Thanks, Carla. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this sunny Tuesday afternoon. If you're out Dunleary way, good news for you. Gafolas. Gafolas on Dunleary East Pier. They're offering 99s for 99 cent. What a deal. That's a big deal. So we just did a little bit of a ring around. Noel, who we had on last week from his ice cream van, Tiger Ice Creams, he sells a 99 at 2.50. Teddy's out Dunleary way in Dublin, they sell their 99s for €3. And Cara Boyle, whereabouts is Cara Boyle? In Ballinasloe, are selling a 99 for €2.30. Is that the cheapest 99 ice cream in this country? So €2.30, Cara Boyle, 99. Because there's going to be a lot of 99s consumed over the coming days, because they're saying it could push into next week. And they're talking about a heat wave, ladies and gentlemen, a heat wave. The definition of a heat wave is 5 days in a row with temperatures 25 degrees centigrade or over. That's the definition of a heat wave in this country. So they're talking about tipping a heat wave over the coming days, which is great because we're going into a long weekend and we'll be able to plan. That's the thing, isn't it? I was talking to somebody yesterday, and that's because we are who we are, because we can't plan barbecues. Why are the Irish the way they are? Because we can't plan barbecues. You know, you come to Wednesday or Thursday and you're thinking, oh yeah, the weather's good. I'll tell you what, we're going to have a barbecue on Saturday. Invite all the friends around. And then come Saturday, it's peeing down out of the heavens. And the last thing you want to be doing is having a barbecue. And then you have to cancel. And then you're not very popular with your friends and you have to make alternative arrangements. So it does. It makes us who we are. The Mediterranean climate, for example, people are more easygoing because they can plan. There's no big panic. We sort of panic when it's hot weather as well. Let's get out there. Let's do it. Get a 99. Go for a walk. Go for a swim. Go for a cycle. Go to Tato Park. It's not Tato Park anymore. What's it called? Emerald Park. Yeah. Emerald Park, yeah. Now, O'Neill Pierce in Ballyshannon in Donegal. Small 99, €2.10. I like this when you do that sort of thing. We're looking for Ireland's cheapest 99 today. 51551, RaidRTE.ie. It's going to be hard to beat Cafolas. They're offering it for 99 cent. And I don't know how long that's... The offer is only available on Thursday. All right, from 12 until 6. So limited enough. People wanting to get their 99 for 99 cent need to follow at Cafolas Ice Cream on social media. So it's just... not tomorrow, but the day after. So you've loads of warning on this. For 6 hours, from 12 to 6, if you're in the Dunleary area. Keep them coming in. Now, Colman Ochter will be with us today. He's a child and adolescent psychotherapist. Always gives good advice. So if you're going through something at home with a child or a teenager and you want advice, which is free of charge, from Coleman, get them into us now, ray@rte.ie. That's ray@rte.ie. And just a reminder that we're taking the show on the road the week of June 26th. We're inviting you to run with me. We call them Run with the Rays. We've been doing it for years, and you can register to take part in any one of our five locations on our website. Just head to rte.ie/ray. And you'll see it there on our homepage. So it's a great evening. Now, we rock up in the Roadcaster. We do the show. And then at 5.30 that evening, we invite you to come along, join us, get the T-shirt and go for a run. It's a 5K run. And it's a great opportunity if you're thinking about running or you're thinking about getting into exercise and you haven't done it before. You can use this as a target. Now, not everybody's going to be a runner. We had a number of walkers, fast walkers. The last time we had runner joggers, people are doing half and half. All are welcome. And we start on the Monday in Buncrana in Donegal. And we got a glimpse of that last week. It's a beautiful coastal path by the sea. Beautiful, looking out onto the Atlantic Ocean. And on a day like today, it's spectacular up there, I'd say. And then we head down on the Tuesday to Dourley Park in Sligo. Lovely location. And then the old rail trail in Mullingar, back to Mullingar. And then we go across east to Wicklow, the Garden County, and the beautiful forest park in Avondale. And then finally on the Friday, we're in Corker Park in Dublin. And you go to rte.ie/ray and register there. We're charging €5, and for that you get to participate in it. You also get the T-shirt, which is a lovely t-shirt in the lovely pale blue. There's probably a scientific name for the blue, but it's a light blue colour, and it has the Run With Red thing on it, and it's something that you can treasure into the future. And we say thanks very much to the local sports partnerships who are helping us out on this one. And Irish Life as well, and local sports partnerships do amazing work all over the country. And if you don't know that you have one in your county, you should go and investigate it and see what they have to offer you, because they do amazing work. Well done to Maya Dunphy. We had Maya in recently. She passed her driving test. Hey! She tweeted, she said, who said you can't teach an old dog new tricks? So happy to pass my driving test. Whoop! She thanked her, it sounds like an Oscar speech here. She thanked her driving school, but also her dad for his endless patience in taking her out to practice. And patience is a big word there, because I don't know, it's going to happen in our house soon that there will have to be driving lessons. And you do need patience. And I've heard of relationships that have perished on the rock of driving lessons. So be careful. So it's great to hear that Maya and her dad had a good experience during the driving lessons. It's tough, and I think the older you get, it's tougher, and I think the more you do it, the tougher it gets, because it becomes a monkey on your back, and the nerves then increase exponentially each time. I'm doing it for the fourth time, and you're thinking, will I ever do this? And then you're very nervous and you're very tense, and of course you don't drive well when you're nervous and tense. Anyway, well done, Maya. And any stories on driving tests, get them into us, 51551RadRT.ie. Remember this.
Ah. Here's the story of a lovely lady who was bringing up three very lovely girls. All of them had hair of gold, like their mother, the youngest one in curls.
Yes, the Brady Bunch from the 1970s. There was Mike and Carol Brady, blended family, Greg, Marcia, Peter, Jan, Bobby and Cindy, and of course, Alice the maid, who was my favourite. She was a bit sarky, but very funny. And the reason we're playing that today is because the Brady Bunch original house is up for sale. The Los Angeles home is going for $5.5 million. An extensive interior renovation makes it look just like it did on the show, including an open staircase where the cast was regularly photographed. The original Brady Bunch, I think they did a reboot of it. Anyway, the original one ended in 1974 when the longtime owner died in 2018. HGTV bought the house where Mike, Carol and the family lived, they did a very Brady renovation, and now it's up for sale now, $5.5 million, if that's something that you'd like. It's 5,140 square feet, five bedrooms, five bathrooms, and it is as it was in the TV programme. 51551RadRT.ie. 220 Mays Kildymo, County Limerick. I had a massive 99 in Shercock in Cavan an hour ago. Gorgeous. €2, says Richard. Now, we'll have to verify that, Richard. €2, that's coming in at the cheapest one so far. Dunphy's shop on the Cork Road in Waterford selling 99s for £1.50. Mick walking up Jouse Mountain in Wicklow. Had one last Saturday. So that's £1.50. Again, we'd have to verify that. Dunphy's shop on the Cork Road in Waterford. Roach's service station in Rosslare Road, Wexford, sells 99s for €2, including sprinkles and topping sauce, says Helen in Murrintown in Wexford. £1.70, County Kildare Circle K. And we've a £1.50 there on Dunphy's. That's going to be hard to beat, I think. Like everything, the price of 99 is reflective of quality. If you pay less, you get icy, not creamy ice cream. I made mint chocolate chip with my home economics students a few years ago. Delicious. That's Noreen. Thanks, Noreen. And my local ice cream van always serves 99s with an umbrella because there is always a chance of sprinkles. Hey, Sean Curry Swords by the sea. It's lovely out there today, I'd say. Sean, looking out at the island. Duffy Super Value Balladrine, a 99. Wait for it, lads. €1. €1. Will you put a call into them and say and verify that? We'll verify that. Thank you very much. We'll verify that. We might even get them on the line. To verify it. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. The Great Fleetwood Mac, Don't Stop. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Cecil says, are all of the 99s the same size? There are cones and smaller cones. Chin rub. Somebody else says, some ice cream machines are calibrated to dispense smaller amounts of ice cream, and your flake is only half the normal size. Buyer beware. I think a lot of them are too big. There's too much of them. And a 1990s story of driving tests. Best driving test story. A teacher of mine did her test 8 times in Tralee. She failed 5. I don't know if it's a she. Oh, it is she, yeah. 5 of these under the same tester. So she failed 5 times, 5 under the same tester. So she went to Killarney as she heard it had a higher pass rate. And who did she have but the Tralee tester filling in for a sick colleague? She passed, though. That's a 1990 story. So far it's Duffy's Super Value Balladrine. It's coming in €1 for a 99. And we have Martin Canny from Duffy's Super Value and Balladrine on the line. Hello, Martin.
Ray, how's the form?
Not too bad. There's vicious rumours going around that you're selling 99s for €1.
We are, Ray, but not every day. So we do them for special occasions. Right. At €1.
And what? How do you define a special occasion?
Paddy's Day is the first one. We kick off the season on Paddy's Day.
Okay.
A green 99 for €1.
Right, fine.
So right. We had them at Easter as well. We've right. Done them at the start of the hot weather there. We've done 3 days of them at €1 as well.
Right, okay, yeah. And when's the next one? Or do you just decide on a whim?
On a whim.
On a whim, right.
We decide if we've got a good feeling that people's tongues are out looking for a lick, you know, we'll satisfy them.
So say, for example, next Monday now, if, you know, bank holiday Monday, people are off, the sun's shining, we're heading into a heat wave. Would that classify as a special occasion?
Heading into a heat wave, sure.
We're in the middle of it, yeah,
that could be a special occasion.
Right.
But we'll have to see if the whim hits us next Monday.
Right. Or the wimpy hits you.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's with the flake on it and the whole lot.
Yeah, and how do people know then if you have a whim of a morning?
Sure, listen, word of mouth.
Word of mouth, right.
We'll advertise it on our social media channels as well that morning.
Right. Duffy's are selling 99s for €1. Queues out the door.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sure, look, at it's a great spot to stop when everyone's heading for Westport and Acula and all we're just off the N5, big car park and everything, so there's room for the camper vans and a lot in there.
And same quality ice cream as normal, same...
Angelito ice cream, Cadbury's flakes, the whole lot.
The whole lot.
Yeah, there's no half measures.
And what about this, I read it in The Guardian there on Saturday, that the flakes are too flaky.
Stick them into the ice cream, they go good and hard.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. What way do you eat yours?
Well, I try and get it in my mouth most of it anyways, but...
Oh, great. So you do a bit of stand-up when you're not selling cones. Yeah. Right, good luck, Martin.
Thanks,
see you, Martin. Great talking to you. There you go. So it's on a whim there. It's not every day that you get a 99 for €1 in Duffy's Super Value Balladrine. On a whim. I like that, though. I like the way they work. Just get up in the morning, look out the window. Sure, we'll sell them for €1 today. We'll sell them for €1 today. We're looking for 2 of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done a Quiz. Yeah, 2 quizzers, 3 Who Done a Questions on music, sport, TV, books, politics, film, comedians, anything that involves human endeavour. And like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get 2 for a correct answer. If you take a clue, it's easier. You get 1 point for a correct answer. And there is a prize. And it's a 2-night stay for 2 adults in one of the Ainua 4-star hotels. They're all over the place. Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel, the Dublin One Hotel, Taste the Magic into the Tullamore Court Hotel. Then there's the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, the Fairways in Dundalk, and any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. There is something for everyone to enjoy, from overnight getaways and spa treatments to elegant afternoon tea or a delicious meal in one of the many restaurants across the Ainua collection. Inua.ie. And you can see the full array of summer offers available starting from €149 across the whole collection of hotels. Here is your qualifying question on this Tuesday afternoon. Flakes are too crumbly. Name the ice cream it goes with. Is it a 29 or a 99? So does the flake go at a 29 or a 99? 0818715925. That's 0818715925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Not this exactly, but I've been working in the business 35 years this year. There you go. Yeah. Now, basketball is a huge sport around the globe. It's growing in popularity here due to, in no small way, to the success of Irish players on the international stage. One such star is Dublin native Aidan Egyeon, a US college basketball player who just completed his undergraduate degree and is home to visit his mum and prepare for some Irish senior men's international games. While he's here, Aidan is hoping to impart his wisdom on the big game to the next generation of Irish basketball players with a series of camps taking place this summer in Dublin. And Aidan joins me in studio now. Good afternoon, Aidan.
How you doing? How you doing?
Good to see you.
Absolutely.
So the brief thing is, you were born here,
yep.
Left here at what age?
So I was born and raised in Dublin. I left here at 13 years of age. So,
right, and what age are you now?
I'm 22, okay. So roughly about 9 to 10 years, yeah.
Okay. You were spotted, were you?
Yeah, so funny story. I mean, we basically, I played for Dublin Lions and we had won our league. So our treat was to go to the States. So we went to the States and we went to attend a camp in Philadelphia. And yeah, I grew a foot in that 1 year. So I went from 5'6" to 6'6". And then I ended up playing really well at that camp and I just stayed over there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're spotted over there, not over here?
No, yeah, spotted over there.
And have you grown any since that?
Yeah, I'm about 6'10", 6'11" now. Yeah, about that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're a tall man.
I'm a big man, yeah.
So apart from the obvious benefits playing basketball, there must be, you know, it's been a you have to bend over coming in through the door there.
Yeah, it's tough. I'll say this, the world is not built for a tall person.
No.
It's not, no. It's really not.
Yeah. So you've had to navigate that. But of course, when you're among basketball players, you wouldn't be the tallest, would you?
No. Again, at the level I'm playing at, there's 7-footers like walking around everywhere. So I feel pretty normal. And then you just step outside in the regular world, you're like, oh, yeah, I guess I am tall.
Yeah. You're tall, yeah.
Yeah.
And what's the, say, in your college team, what height would the smallest guy be?
Well, it depends now. Sometimes we have some guys that are about 5'10", but they're really talented now.
Yes.
But like, I think the usual smallest guy on a team would probably be like 6'1", 6'2". That's the usual smallest guy.
So you got a scholarship then to go to college. Because people would be interested to know how the process works.
Yeah.
Because there is a process, isn't there?
There's absolutely a process.
Yeah. So you're spotted, you get a scholarship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So right now, when I started, I was spotted. I got a scholarship to go to a private school, basically like a private secondary school, if you will.
Yeah.
And then from there, I became one of the best players in the country, in America.
So you were ranked 55th.
Yeah. So
that's big time.
It's big in the whole country.
And did you cry when you heard that you were expecting to be higher, were you?
Yeah, I did. I did cry because in my opinion, I thought I was at least top 20 in the country. But again, that's just to show. I mean, I had high expectations for myself.
Yes.
But on the grand scheme of things, you know, and I'm proud of myself. I'm proud of the work that I did. So
So then you play at college, and people are watching you all the time. Now I know but scouts are watching you all the time, aren't they?
Yes, scouts are watching all the time, every move, every movement.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're looking for somebody very special.
Very, very special. Yeah.
So where the draft thing? Because I watched Air recently, so I know I'm an expert on this. No, I'm not. but that movie's about how Michael Jordan, when he was in the draft, and then he was signed by Nike.
Yeah,
And it's a great movie. You haven't seen it yet?
No,
it's well worth seeing.
Yeah.
So what happens? Explain the draft to us then.
Basically, I mean, the draft is basically when you want to go play for the NBA, and when you're in college basketball, if you're eligible when you're finished playing at the end of every year. But now it's up to you, because you have to be careful. If you put your name in the draft and put your intention of staying in that draft, you're foregoing the rest of your college eligibility.
Right.
So you can't come back and play in college. So what players are doing, players are very smart now. They just don't throw their name in the draft and stay in. They have to basically strike when the iron's the hottest.
Wow.
So like me, like I've been kind of smart with it. I mean, after this year, I'm definitely going to pursue it all the way. But I kind of wanted to strike when I knew I had the best chance of achieving
that dream. It's like saying I'm going professional,
yeah,
and there's no going back to amateur after that.
No, you can't do that. Yeah.
So what happens then if you mistime it?
If you mistime it, then you're done. I mean, you just a lot of guys would have to, you know, they probably won't get drafted, but there's other ways to enter the NBA, whether it's two-way contracts, whether it's playing in the G League, which is basically like the second league of the NBA.
Okay.
They stay there for a while. Or a lot of players come overseas and play and then get scouted there too. So being drafted is not the only way that you can make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I remember talking to, what's the guy, he used to be goalkeeper for Ireland, Darren, can't remember his surname, but his dad was one of the first black basketball players to come to Ireland.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the 70s.
Oh, wow.
And that was his story, yeah. You know, and he came to Ireland when Ireland was predominantly white.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Things have changed an awful lot since then, haven't they? Yeah, yeah. So you play on the Irish international team?
Yes, playing the senior men's team, yeah.
Right, but if you went professional, that would change, would it?
No, I'd still play.
Oh, would you? Right.
Yeah, I would still play, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the team like?
Oh, the team's great. Their team is great. I mean, so last year was my first year playing for them. My intention was to play for them since I was 18, but the schedules never worked out. So last year I was actually one of their youngest guys on the team.
Yeah.
So it was an absolute, it was an honor to wear it, man. Like then. That country across your chest, you know, so it was great. And we're playing again this summer. First game is July 19th home. We play Luxembourg and then we play Croatia, I believe, August 5th. So,
Yeah. It's sort of, there's an assumption, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, that if you're a tall black guy, you play basketball.
Oh, yes.
That must be annoying as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'd say it is a little bit because there's more to me than just basketball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know, my mom likes to call me a Renaissance man, you know, because I have many interests, but
go on, yeah. Share some with us.
You know, like I do love storytelling, you know,
right.
I love reading, you know, I do love, you know, fashion.
Yeah.
I'm a nerd. I love learning. I'm a big sponge. I like the nerdy things, you know. I love science, you know. So there's different things about me that nobody might not know because they just say basketball player, you know.
And your mom, that was a big move at 13.
Yeah.
Seeing her little boy, well, you know, 6'6" boy, staying over there.
Absolutely.
Like, her instincts would have been to say, come home.
Oh, that was what she said immediately.
Yeah.
They called her and said, you know, your son has a chance to change his life if you allow him to stay in the States. And she said no at first. And then, they begged her. They changed her mind. And then she asked me if I wanted to stay. And I said, no, I want to come home. I mean, I'm still a baby boy at the time.
Yeah.
But thankfully, I had good people around me who had, you know, who had their vision that I didn't even see. So I just ended up staying.
And who'd you stay with?
I stayed with my mom's brother.
Oh, right. So you have relations over
there. I do, yeah. He's in New York.
Right.
So I stayed in Brooklyn over there.
Uh-huh. And how did your mom end up in Ireland?
So my mom actually, lived in America for a little bit. You know, we're Nigerian,
right.
My mom and my dad. So, but she just moved over to Ireland, you know, just to come. And she always wanted to live in Europe. So she stumbled up on little old Ireland and she just loved it. She stayed.
Right.
Yeah.
And now she's, I'd imagine... It's changed now. It must be pride there.
Yeah, absolutely. But she loves it here, and it gives me an opportunity to come back at least once a year too. Because then I obviously want to see my mom too. So
yeah,
that's great. Yeah.
How is she?
Oh, she's great. She's doing great. Yeah.
Yeah. She loves to see you coming, but like obviously you're a big man. You've big appetite.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Let's just say that the grocery bill is a little different when I come home. Yeah.
We're in the middle of a cost of living crisis as well.
No, it's surprising me how high stuff is now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's
scary. Oh, yeah. It really is.
Yeah. So she probably won't be inviting you home too often.
Once a year is enough, isn't it?
Once a year, yeah. So the other thing about, I suppose injury is a thing, is it? Does that weigh heavy on your mind?
Yeah, it does. You know, I've been blessed. You know, I'm a durable person, but I've been through my first share. You know, I just had surgery on my hip about 2 years ago now.
Right.
So tore my rotator cuff, you know, about 3-4 years ago. So like it comes with it. It's part of that game. Everybody deals with it, you know.
Yeah.
But the most important thing is just, you know, being healthy, eating well, sleeping well, making sure you have your right rehab, you know. Being a professional, take a professional approach with how you know,
do
take care of your body. Yeah.
So the draft. You say you're going to go at it next year.
Yeah.
So you sort of, I suppose you're, you know, putting your name in the hat and you're going, I'm available.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And have you any idea if there's any interest now, for example?
There's always interest. They're always watching.
Right.
You know, you're 6'10", 6'6", 11". You're athletic. You're skilled.
Yes.
There's always interest. Now it's how you perform during this upcoming season. Now you have a good year, then they'll really, you know what I mean. So you got to be ready. This summer's huge. Even playing for the senior national team is really big because they're watching those games too. Because you're playing against pros, so you're gonna see a lot of that.
And then I suppose it's not just about your performance this year. It's about the other people who will be putting their names in the hat.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And the competition is going steeper and steeper because everybody's getting better, you know. Everybody's getting better.
Yeah, because there's a whole science around all those things you mentioned.
Absolutely.
The food and the exercise and all that sort
absolutely.
Of thing. Absolutely. Yeah. And can you dare to dream about which NBA team?
I'd be lucky. I'd be lucky for anyone, really.
Right.
I don't think I have one that I, you know, I get that question a lot. I don't think I have one that I'm like, I really okay. want to, you know.
You but, mentioned there earlier on somebody saying to your mum that this was an opportunity for her son to change his life.
Yeah.
So give us an idea of the life-changing
it's,
effect.
I mean, it's been an absolute blessing, of course. You know, just even getting a free like college education is crazy, you know. Given the opportunity to potentially make a good living out of this is crazy,
yeah.
you know. Just, you know, and just learning. I mean, I'm a different man. Like, I've matured so quick, you know. The wisdom that I have, like, basketball's taught me so much about life, too. And it's actually brought me closer in my faith as well. So, yeah. so everything as well has just been great.
And there's we don't appreciate it. We sort of have an idea
yeah.
how big they are, how big the stars they are in America,
yeah.
basketball stars.
Oh, it's big.
It's huge, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Like like this isn't you know unlikely to happen to you, but the Michael Jordan,
yeah.
right, is still making $400 million a year.
Oh, that's yeah.
From his shoes.
Maybe more.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's crazy. Like, the marketing side of things. You know, there's one thing to be good, really good player, and there's another thing to be good and marketable.
Yes.
That's a whole other thing.
Right.
You know, so if you have both now, you're going to be very yeah. be very happy with yourself.
yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I think I haven't seen you play, but definitely you're marketable in the other way, so,
yes, sir.
So that's good. So don't be a stranger. We're going to be watching you now.
Absolutely.
And good luck with the next year.
Thank you so much.
And will that be on your mind every time you go out now, that this is the year, this is my year?
Absolutely. I mean, it's on my mind now as I'm yeah. walking in here.
Yeah. yeah. So every game's a final, really, for you. It's like... It's
yes,
like,
yes. Every game's like a final.
Yeah.
Every game's like a final.
Right.
Yes, sir.
And it's Aidan Egeon.
Yes.
Egeon.
Aidan Egeon, yes.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Aidan, lovely to meet you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
Yeah,
pleasure.
Good luck with everything.
Yes,
we take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551, The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, people would have seen the last Succession last night. I haven't seen it yet, and we're not going to give any spoilers, so don't go switching off the radio. But there is a Succession link to our next item, because we're talking eulogies, and there was a number of eulogies in Succession. There was the brother, the two sons and the daughter. That's all I'm going to say. And we're joined in studio by Brian Whiteside, humanist funeral celebrant, to talk about eulogies. Have they always been there, Brian, to your knowledge, or is it a sort of, you know, last 20 or 30 years phenomenon?
Well, I've been conducting humanist funerals now for just coming up to about 20 years. And of course, from a humanist perspective, we place a lot of emphasis on eulogies, because a humanist funeral is all about the person. I mean, traditionally, and I'm not here to talk about religion, because yes. I'm not an authority, but obviously I know a little bit about it. And I do know that certainly in the Roman Catholic Church, eulogies in the church were sort of frowned on, because the Catholic Mass, funeral Mass, was really seen as a petition to God to take the soul into heaven. And it was not, strictly speaking, seen as what we all call now a celebration of the life. But it has sort of morphed into that. And whereas secular music would have been banned, and now it's sort of allowed a little bit more. And eulogies are generally allowed, but always, or as far as I know, always after the Mass. So it's not part of the Mass.
Mm.
And that's fair enough. So you have the religious piece, and then you have the personal piece. But in a humanist context, it's always been important, because we don't have the religious piece, okay? So what we're doing when we conduct a humanist funeral is we're focusing on the person. And the phrase I often use is, what we're trying to do is to balance the sadness at losing a loved one with also taking the opportunity to reflect on the life and to celebrate what hopefully was a life well lived.
Yes,
and fully lived.
And that's the eulogy.
Yeah.
I was at a funeral in the last couple of years where the eulogy was first, which I thought was a good idea, because we were immediately
yeah.
in contact with the person.
Yeah. Well, very often when I meet a family to, you know, to help plan a humanist funeral, and it's always important to plan properly. We all know the phrase, to fail to prepare is to prepare to fail. And a lot of families say, well, we'll have the eulogy last because they're used to it in the church. But I say, well, maybe, but and there's no absolutes, but maybe do it first for the very reason that you say, Ray, because this is about the person. And let's get into that. I mean, I would start off with some introductory remarks to welcome people, to formally sympathise with the family and to try and give a context to talk a little bit about that sadness and celebration and maybe a little bit of personal stuff, depending on the circumstances. But then I'd say, and now I'm glad to say, we're going to hear from people who actually knew the person, because very often I wouldn't have known the person.
See, yeah. Which is brilliant. So immediately you're bringing the person,
yeah,
the loved one.
The horse's mouth, so to
yeah,
speak.
And you're bringing the person into yeah. wherever you are, yeah. the church or the room or wherever
yeah.
it is,
yeah.
which I think is hugely important, because like, and you can't yourself as a celebrant or priest or whoever, you can't be expected to know everybody you bury, everybody, you know, you can't be expected to. And you, absolutely. Despite your best efforts, yeah, you'll yeah, do research yeah. and all that.
Now,
sort of thing.
Sometimes a family will say, look, none of us are able to speak and we'd like you
okay,
to do it all.
Yes, yes, yeah.
And goodness me, I've had some funny ones there where there's been very little to say and you obviously can't make it up, but you just have to make the best of it,
right.
you know.
So you've hit on something there, which brings us nicely on to the next thing we need to talk about. And that is that, you know, it's a big ask, isn't it, for a lot of people to do a eulogy?
It is. And very often, you know, families will say, look, none of us really feel we're able to do this. And I always say, look, you don't have to. I'm not pushing you into it. But I am quietly encouraging you, because what I'd like you to think about is, in years to come, I'd love you to look back on this time and to think, this was a sad time, a difficult time, but you know what? We did it well. And I'm so glad I spoke, because I think it's quite a nice thing. You know, you do it with great pride. I spoke at my father's funeral and I'm very glad I did. I look back on it with some pride yeah. and, you know, it's good. But I think people generally do need a little bit of encouragement and a little bit of help and guidance. And I suppose, you know, having been doing this for nearly 20 years, I am in a position, hopefully.
And that's why you're here.
To
so the pointers. So.
And the pointers, very, very simply, a phrase I often use is, what we're trying to do here is to capture the essence of the person. I think that's a great phrase. And we're also here to, you know, most of the people attending a funeral, very often they will know most of the things about the person. So they don't want to hear everything, but they want a synopsis on their life. And sometimes someone will stand up and they'll say, so-and-so was born in such and such a house and such and such a day, and they went to this school from that year to that year. We all did that.
Mm.
We all did that. So it's not interesting. So to try and make it interesting rather than boring, that sounds so obvious, but sometimes it needs to be said. And to, rather than looking at what I call the sort of CV, who they are and what they did and where they went to college and all of that, to talk about their passions and what made them tick. And I think it's lovely. And to pepper it, if possible, with anecdotes that sort of back this up.
Mm.
And I love when I introduce somebody to speak at a funeral, to deliver a eulogy, I sit over to the side and I'm quietly glancing down at the people attending. And I often see them instinctively nodding and they're sort of saying to themselves, that's him or yeah. that's her.
Yes.
And I think then, you know, you've got it.
Yeah.
And of course, the other thing, is not to be too long.
Right.
I mean, we all, even people like you, Ray, you only have a certain attention span.
yeah. Well, you don't mean if when people are listening to me or when I'm listening to people. Anyway, but, we leave it. You don't need to answer
that. I always say I don't carry a stopwatch.
Mm.
But I think 10 minutes is probably,
right, okay,
probably about the limit.
Okay.
And maybe even less.
Yeah.
Sometimes less is more.
Okay.
And of course, sometimes maybe more than one person is doing the eulogy. Sometimes I mean, I had a family, the last funeral I did, three children in the family, and they all wanted to speak. And we decided that they would stand up together. And there's a very nice optic there. It's lovely sort of stand of solidarity or whatever. And these are this person's three children standing up together as we're celebrating his life. And they would each speak briefly and be very careful to cover different parts of their life or different aspects. And one of them might tell a couple of little anecdotes and that sort of thing. But I think it's well worth putting work into it.
That's the next thing. You could do this on your own. You don't need me at all. So the work, you don't get up and expect to be able to ad lib on a day that's going to be flooded with emotion.
I think to ad lib is dangerous and foolish. Now, sometimes people do. But what I encourage people to do is to script quite carefully what they're going to say, or at least do bullet points, okay? And very often someone will say at the planning meeting, they'll say, look, I might break down. And I say, well, that's very understandable because it's a terribly emotional day. And in fact, if nobody gets at all emotional, you'll sort of almost think there's something wrong. This is a funeral, you know? And I say to somebody, be absolutely prepared. And if you find you can't do it, if you have it scripted, you'll maybe have a substitute who you can hand over to. And then I'm the backstop. If necessary, I'll take over and I'll say, look, I'm now.
So it takes the pressure off.
Yeah, it takes them. Yeah, and usually the pressure having been taken off, they do it okay.
Right.
Okay. And sometimes someone will have scripted very carefully, but then they will ad lib because they'll get into a run.
They get feedback as well.
And they're all right and they see people listening and, you know.
So a thing we need to repeat over and over again, the essence of the person.
That's hugely important, the essence of the person.
Yeah. So their passions, which is good, anecdotes then to illustrate those passions. What I know this sounds nearly scientific, but it's important, isn't it?
What made them tick,
And then the mixture of sort of comedy, if you like, funny anecdotes versus it is an emotional time. People have lost a loved one. Someone has died, you know. Yeah. So to get that right.
Yeah, I'm often asked about that, as you can imagine. Yeah. And I think, okay, there's a wide variety of circumstances and some are terribly, terribly sad. And some of them are...
Of course, yes. Less, if somebody has lived a good life...
I think, by and large, there is usually a place for humour. Usually. And I often say that I think at a funeral, there will be tears, there will be smiles, there will be maybe little ripples of laughter. That's human emotion.
Yeah.
And as you're looking back on a life, it's lovely to recall little humorous moments, and it's natural to be sad as well, and that's the way it is at funerals.
Yeah. And then the end, you know, finishing up something. We can all start things, but they what do you do at the end? What way should you conclude?
A eulogy.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes people will actually, they'd have been facing the people attending, they will maybe turn to the coffin and say, in conclusion, farewell, Dad, or whatever, and thanks for everything. That's one way of doing it.
Yes, yeah.
Some might put a little bit of poetry at the end. You know, I thought I'd conclude with a few
Seamus
words
Heaney
from my father's or my mother's favourite poet.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's quite a nice way of ending. Or you can simply say, look, it's been great to be able to stand here and talk about this person who meant so much to me, and that's that.
Okay, you know that when people are asked their biggest fear, that public speaking is usually in the top three.
I've heard that.
Yeah. So, despite all your good advice, people are still going to be scared. Should people rehearse it?
Oh,
at home.
I would have thought so.
Yes. And should they read it in front of somebody?
That's entirely up to them. I don't know.
Yeah, because if you're reading it for the first time out loud, sometimes I find, even here, you know, you can be overcome with emotion.
Yeah, Yeah.
So if it is an emotional day already,
I think absolutely.
Yeah.
As much preparation as you can.
Yeah. You can't over prepare.
No.
Yeah. And then that thing you had, the family and the three siblings got up. Mm. And advice, I would imagine, is that they all tell each other what they're saying so that there's no overlap.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Someone who I know quite well who did a eulogy regrets the fact that they spoke about themselves too much and not about the dead person. You know, they spoke about themselves in the context of the dead person. You know.
Well, yeah. And that does happen. And it happens mainly if the person speaking had a very, very strong relationship with that person.
And they did. It happens.
Yeah. And it's almost inevitable that that'll happen to a certain extent. And I think that people will understand that and be forgiving and sort of say how touching it is that the person delivering the eulogy spoke so much about them because their lives were clearly intertwined and there was such love and respect and all of that.
Yeah, between them, right.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? You have notes there. He came prepared, you see. Yeah, there you go. So,
I think we've pretty well...
Yeah, done everything.
Pretty
there.
Well covered
yes,
it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But I suppose in conclusion, I would encourage people where appropriate to do rather than not do a eulogy.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, hopefully you will be able to get help from someone like me. And not that we're... I suppose we have to have our chosen topics, don't we? And I've been doing this for so long.
Yes, well, you have experience. Yeah. You've seen it. You've seen the good, the bad, and the not so good.
And I think that people will look back on a sad time in maybe a better way if they've been very involved and they've planned the funeral very carefully and the eulogy.
Would you get... I'm this is advice, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that if you are... scared of speaking in public, and if this is way out of your comfort zone, you should probably say that at the start.
Absolutely.
Anybody who knows me...
On one occasion, I think one of the strangest things I was ever asked to do, I got a phone call from a funeral director that I know very well, and he said to me, look, I've got a strange request for you. We have a family, they're having a funeral in a church, and the son would like to do a eulogy and he's not able to do it. And he asked me to meet him, help him put it together, and then for me to deliver it on his behalf.
So he wrote it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, well,
I agreed to do this on the basis that he wrote it.
Yeah.
Now, when I met him, we spent about 3 hours rewriting it because it really wasn't going to work terribly well.
Yeah.
But I was delighted to do it because he really wanted his words to be spoken. But he just felt he absolutely couldn't do it.
Mm.
And it was a strange one. And I felt a little bit odd, but I did it.
Well, we're going to get stranger and stranger because, you know, with AI, people are going to be going into ChatGPT and asking... to write a eulogy.
Exactly. You wouldn't need me here at all. You just press a button.
Press a button, yeah, yeah. And then you can
be replaced.
You could get a voice of your choice to read out your words or the, you know, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, Brian, thanks so much for that. And I'm sort of aware of the fact that when eulogies come up in a family, it's going to be a very sad time. But maybe some of the stuff that we talked about today might have stuck and they'll just help you out. Because there'll be so much else going on.
I hope so. Because I think it's a worthwhile topic.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for covering it. Thanks.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a funeral I was at had the celebrant line up everyone from the aisles along the side of the church as the coffin was brought out. It was such a gorgeous moment. It was like a guard of honour. And hi, Ray and Brian, where can you have a secular funeral? Well, the humanist people provide, I suppose, a secular funeral. And they have a website. If you put in Humanist Ireland, you'll find that. Humanism.ie. Humanism.ie. Ray, it's not a wedding, and I believe a simple funeral without these long eulogies is all that's needed. Why not do a eulogy when the family go for a meal or a few drinks? Eulogies are gone way over the top, says that person. And we spoke a eulogy for our sister. We shared it and drafted it and I practiced it in front of the bathroom mirror. All went well, says that person. Now, the sunny weather is to continue over the weekend and into next week. And we need to take care of our dogs. Yes, it's different for them, you know. Karina Fitzsimons of Dogs Trust Ireland is on the line now. Hello, Karina.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, yeah. So heat stroke is a thing that happens, and it happens in the most innocuous situations for our dogs.
Yeah, many people don't realise that dogs can't cope with the heat. They basically can't cool themselves down like humans. So we're all delighted with the hot weather. We're putting on t-shirts and shorts. And obviously dogs, they have their fur and they can't do anything about it. And research commissioned by Dogs Trust revealed that 74% of heatstroke cases are caused by exercise. And of those cases, 68% were caused by owners taking their dogs for a walk in hot weather. Mm. So we're appealing to people to not walk their dogs in the middle of the day, especially on hotter days, and to try walk early in the morning or late at evening when it's a bit cooler. And if you're at home, to try and keep a shaded spot. If you're in work, make sure that when you're leaving your home that you know which way the sun moves around the house, so your dog has shade at all times, indoors and outdoors.
Brilliant advice, common sense, and I don't think a lot of people out there would have known that bringing your dog for a walk midday in this weather would have done them any harm. So we're delighted to pass that advice on from you in Dogs Trust. Thanks, Karina. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, Anish Toshi now, and the Preeskelton in Oakdale, Corta Wallish. Gurumar, good. Thanks very much, Cort. 51551RAID.RTE. We were speaking to Brian Whiteside. Brian Whiteside, he was the humanist we were speaking to. And we weren't allowed to speak and have a eulogy for my dad, biggest regret of our lives. Things have changed over the last 20 years. That's that with all there. Right, okay, we've two quizzers standing by. Ready to take part in our Who Done It quiz. Two quizzers and there is a prize. And it's a two-night stay in one of the Ainua four-star hotels. They're all over the country. The Hibernian Hotel in Kilkenny, the One Hotel in Dublin, the Tullamore Court Hotel in... Surprise, surprise. Tullamore, the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, Fairways in Dundalk, and any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Ainua.ie, and there is something for everyone. And you can see the full array of summer offers available starting at €149. Hello, Mairead. Hello, Mairead. Hello, Mairead. Hello, Mairead. Mairead? No. Hello, Martin.
Yeah, hi, Ray.
You're there, right. We've lost Mairead. Mairead Monaghan in Galway. We'll try and get her back up there. You're in Burren, County Offaly.
That's correct, Ray, yeah. That's it, on the way to the Midlands.
Yeah, but where are you heading?
Well, actually, now we're in the camper van, Ray, and we're heading out to North Spain at 1st thing in the morning.
Nice. Who's we?
Myself, the fisher, and my daughter Louise, and Bailey the Labrador.
Right. How's Bailey getting on in the camper van?
Well, Bailey's getting on great, but now I'll take that advice there from Dogs Trust about the weather. Well, I mean, obviously we would have been anyway because we had her in the set there and everything else, and they said to be very careful with it in the sun.
Yes, yeah. So where you're going is going to be warmer again. So what's the plan? You're going to Bilbao on the ferry.
The Salamanca, that's the new ferry.
Right. And then when you get there, what are you going to do? Hello? It's one of those days. Martin. Martin's gone. What are the chances? Let's try Mairead. Hello, Mairead. No, Mairead and Martin are gone. Hello, Mairead. Hello, Mairead. Hello, Martin. No. Hello, Martin.
Hi.
No, there you are. You're back. Yes. I don't know what's going on today.
So good here.
Yeah. I blame the weather. Yeah. Remember back in the day when it was really fine weather, the telly would be giving you hassle there. There'd be all those bars, those parallel bars going up. Anyway, so Bilbao, and then how long are you going to stay in Spain, the camper van?
Well, the plan is, Ray, is to come out of the ferry port, turn right, and hook that coast all the way to Portugal.
I thought you were going to give us the turn by turn there. You go down about a mile and then you turn left. And then
we leave that up to Google Maps. Right?
Yeah. So you hug the coast. Wow, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. And we'll just stop off wherever, we just see a nice place, spend a couple of days and move on to the next place. And sure, we'll see how we get on from there.
And how long are you campervanning? How many years?
Oh, we're probably for 10, 12 years with the camper van, then with the caravan, and then we had tents before that.
Right. It's a way of life, yeah. So you're well used to it.
We're travellers of the best of heart now.
So, Mairead.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
I thought they'd made you up, Mairead. But you actually
I'm
exist.
Here.
You're here, right. Okay. And you're Mairead Monaghan in Galway.
I am, Ray.
Yes. Whereabouts in Galway are you, Mairead?
I'm in a place called Carndulla. It's about 10 miles from Galway City out towards Hetford.
I know where you are, yeah, Carndulla.
And Rory best walked past that Thursday.
Did he? Great.
Yeah, and he was going to the Deep.
Yes, yeah, because they're trying to get a new place out there in Galway somewhere, and he's walking 300.
Respite.
That's it. Yes, yeah. We raised funds.
He passed the door. Yes.
Yeah, and he's doing 330 kilometres or something. Fair juice to him.
A lot of time.
Yeah, yeah. So you're working there in the post office and fifth generation.
Fifth generation, yes, is here since 1834.
Wow.
It's a long time.
Yeah. How does that feel, you know, to be so rooted in a community?
Oh, I love my customers in the area and I never leave it.
Yeah.
Even though my husband lives in Derry.
He lives in Derry?
He lives in Derry. I live in Galway. He just steps there a while ago and I see him Thursday night.
Right. And how's that working out for you?
We commute a lot.
They say that's the recipe to a happy marriage, is that sort of thing.
Yeah, we get on great.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Great. I'm sure you do, yeah. Right,
that's my own things when I'm down here, and then I'm with him when I'm in Derry.
Great.
Yeah.
We'll have to get you into studio and have a chat about that, because that's
no way.
That's a great old story. I want to hear the rest of that story. Where did you meet your husband?
Lourdes.
Lourdes, right? Okay.
And I work with the Galway Pilgrimage, and he works with the Order of Malta in Derry, and we go out the same day.
Aha.
And we met outside the hotel, and the rest is history.
You got married and you commute to each other.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. We've met Martin already, so I'll tell you both. So it's Mairead versus Martin. Three questions each. Okay. I'll give you the category and then you tell me if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue and get it right, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most clues at the end or the most points at the end is the winner. If it's drawing points, we go to a qualifying question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Thank you.
Okay, Martin, you're still there, are you?
Yeah, I am indeed.
Great. Okay, Mairead, to you first. It's music. Music, do you want a clue or not?
No clue.
Okay, who is this for 2 points?
Everybody says, everybody knows. Clothes don't make the woman makes the clothes. Everybody knows, but everybody's wrong. Everything is better when I pull on those high heel boots. I don't feel like cleaning the kitchen.
Now, it's an Irish woman, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I'm not great at music, but is it Melody May?
No. Which was a good shot there, but it's Mary Coughlan.
And she's from Galway.
She is. There you go. I thought you would recognise her, the Galway accent and all that. Anyway, early days, don't fret. Martin.
Hi, Ray.
Irish music, Irish women. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue, Ray.
No
clue.
Okay,
okay.
Yeah. So for 2 points, who is this?
Sonny, don't go away. I'm here all alone. Your daddy's the same. Never comes home. Nights are so long. Silence goes on. I'm feeling so tired.
Now, who's that?
I think that might be Mrs. Mary Black.
It is Mary Black. It is, yes, it is, yeah. 2 points there. Well done. Good start for you. Now, Mairead, time for you to try and catch up here. Our second category is Irish women in sport. Irish women in sport.
No clue.
Okay. Who is this for 2 points?
Being a twin, we were always, I suppose that's something that Mum and Dad sort of always emphasised. We were a team. Me and Lisa were always a team growing up. And it was one of those things that Mum and Dad was like, it doesn't matter who wins, as long as one of you do. You're each other's biggest supporters. And I suppose that's probably where my love of teams come from, probably. And like you said, golf is a very individual sport. It can make you a little bit selfish.
Who's that?
I don't know her first name. Leona McGuire.
Yes, it is Leona McGuire. Well done.
Oh.
Well done. You're on the scoreboard. Well done.
Well done.
Now, Martin, you're two. Irish women in sport. What do you want to do? Do you want to go for a clue or not?
I'll go with a clue.
Okay, you have to work out the strategy there. Okay, this Irish captain will lead out her team at the Women's World Cup. For 1 point, who is this?
Do you know what? Like, the level of women's football has just gone through the roof in these last couple of years. Like, yeah. Watching it on telly, it's like putting a lads game on. Actually, for me, I think there's so much talent. But seeing it on a day-to-day basis with the likes of Viv and Kim Little, like, it'd be definitely one of them too.
Who's that? Who's that?
Oh, you had me there, Ray.
No.
No.
It's Katie McCabe. So she's the Irish captain, and she's, you know, going to march out for the Women's World Cup down in Australia in July, isn't it? July. Okay. So it's 2-2. It's down to the wire. 2-2.
Okay.
Mairead, the final category, TV characters. TV characters. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue.
No clue. Okay. So for 2 points, now it's the name of the TV character and not the actor. We want the TV character's name. For 2 points, who is this?
Look. You're smart to ask about the money, you are. But Matson won't go there. You haven't been around this, but I've got done a good deal, and you'll get enough to do whatever you want. I do ATM, you do Pierce. It'll be a fresh start for all of us. It'll make things better, and it starts there.
And it is?
No idea at all.
No. That's Logan Roy, played by Brian Cox. From Succession. There you go. Yeah, it's on.
I never saw the program.
Did you not? No, it's on Sky Atlantic. No. There. It's brilliant. I'm jealous actually that you haven't seen it because you know it's there for you to watch. Anyway, so you're not out of it yet, Mairead. Martin has a question in hand. If he gets anything out of this, Martin, if you get anything out of this, you're today's winner. If you don't, we're into a tiebreak situation. We're on TV characters. What do you want to do?
Go for a clue, Ryan.
Go for a clue. Okay. You could say cheers to this TV character, and again, it's the name of the character, not the actor. For 1 point, which TV character is this?
6 months ago, I was living in Boston. My wife had left me, which was very painful. Then she came back to me, which was excruciating. On top of that, my practice had grown stagnant, and my social life consisted of hanging around a bar night after night.
Well...
I'm nearly sure that's Kelsey Kramer, right?
I need the character's name, though.
Phaser.
Yeah, you see, I needed the character's name first. That's the rules, isn't it? They're saying I can't change the rules, Martin. That's what they're saying. So, it's two all. So let's go to the tiebreaker. We asked this question before you went on air.
Right.
And sorry about that, Martin, but the rules is rules. You know, rules is rules.
No.
Yeah. And I specified character, not actor.
Yeah, okay.
Right. According to Google Maps, we asked this question. How long would it take for you to walk from the Spire in Dublin City to the Fungi statue in Dingle in County Kerry? So the Spire to Fungi. And your guess, Mairead, was?
20 hours, 40 minutes.
20 hours, 40 minutes. It's 333 kilometres. And your guess, Martin, was? The phones are letting us down big time today. I think Martin's just gone. Hello, Martin.
Yeah, hi, Ray.
Yeah, your guess was?
I think it was 22.
It was 18 hours. 18 hours I have in front of me here. It was 18 hours, yeah.
Eight.
Now, both of you are way off. It's 68 hours, but Mairead was the closest. Martin, you were so close. Sorry about that. I tell you what we're going to do. Seeing as you have the camper van, we're going to send you out not one, but two Ray Darcy Show Keep Cups, and drive safely and enjoy the trip down the coastline of Spain. Mind yourself. See you, Martin.
Indeed,
bye,
Ray. Thanks very much, Ray.
Right, bye now. Bye.
Thank you,
then. Mairead, well done. Bye.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Yeah, you're off.
By
the skin of your teeth. I knew a.ie. They're all 4-star hotels all over the country, and you can choose one of them for a 2-night stay with the man in your life who's in Derry. There you go.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Great talking to you. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
As a funeral celebrant, says Liam, I now find myself assisting people in writing their own eulogies before they die. One of the family will deliver the eulogy at the funeral, but if they don't feel up to it, I deliver it for them. The last message from the deceased. I've never heard of that before. That's Liam there. Thanks for that, Liam. 5155 on ray@rte.ie. Now we're joined in studio by Colman Nochter, child and adolescent psychotherapist. I was in a bookshop the other day. Your book's in the top 10.
Yes. Yeah. Delighted. Well. Absolutely.
The 4-7 zone.
It's 3 weeks in top 10 now. It's fantastic.
Oh, congratulations on that. Thanks very much. Congratulations on that. Now, a couple of things before we get to our listeners' questions. You've been writing for a long time about too much competition in sport. And then the GAA must have been listening to you, because last week they announced a ban on all competitions for under 12s. You must be delighted.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in it because the discussions that have come out of it since. You know, so you'll always have people who'll say sport has gone soft and you're ruining this, and children need to have disappointment in order to learn a life lesson. And then you'll have others saying, no, it's about participation and inclusion. And you'll never get those two people to meet in the middle. You know, so there'll always be people who'll be put out by it. In my view, again, this is aimed at adults. It's not aimed at children. It's the adults, the coaches and the parents that this email that headquarters from Croke Park were saying, look, stop doing this. Because what was happening is Go Games has been around all the time. That is the rule. But people have been running these underground under-9s blitzes and elite under-10 competitions.
So Go Games, and it was mentioned loads of times in the last week, that's where they can't have any competitions. So that's been going for a long time.
That's been going for a long time. But I suppose the clampdown on it is to stop that. In my view, it is better to perhaps frustrate a 10 and 11 year old who's really sporty and competitive until they're 13 than to lose a load of 10 and 11 year olds by introducing it. So I've had many children sit in front of me saying I gave up sport because it was too serious. I never saw one child say they gave up because it wasn't serious enough. Do you know what I mean?
There you go. That's it. And you're at the cold face, so.
Yeah, pretty much.
And as I say, you've been writing about it and talking about it for a long time. You're not a Johnny Come Lately on it at all. I see Education Minister Norma Foley is bringing into Cabinet proposals for a landmark 5 million pilot to offer psychological counselling for primary schools.
Yeah, this is something they kind of mooted this idea last year. I've always said I think this would be a game changer. We need the presence of mental health practitioners in schools. The biggest problem is signposting. We have no primary care facility to signpost children who are at risk of developing a mental health problem really early. So when you can identify these children in schools, you can put the support in place in the school. There was a great presentation from a lady from Devon, Sarah Stockholm, over last year. I remember with the National Parents Council, and she was talking about a similar project that they run in Dorset. And it's just fantastic. Occupational therapists, all these teams of people that are able to do it. So on the face of it, fantastic. 5 million is a tiny amount of money. Yeah. If this is spread really thin and you get, you know, schools getting €180 each or something, you know, to get wellbeing books, it's going to be absolutely removed. So I think the idea is more psychology presence from the NEPs, and there's a wellbeing practitioner post.
What's the NEPs?
National Educational Psychological Service.
Oh yeah, right,
so
okay.
they would do a lot services.
What would it look like? Would it be somebody? Obviously, smaller schools wouldn't have a full-time person, but maybe a number of schools could share a person.
I think it'll be kind of district-based.
Yes,
so you'll have
yes.
a kind of a hub, and certainly the Dorset model is they would have 4 or 5 schools in their area, and they would call in if you were concerned about a child. They'd observe them in the class and be able to signpost them. Actually, that might be a learning issue, that might be a behavioural issue, that might be an emotional issue, which would be fantastic because then
you can't expect teachers to be... They're not qualified to do that, although they're called on to do it all the time.
Absolutely, and absolutely unfair to expect them to be able to do that as well. And then again, the GP having to make that call, having seen this child for 2 minutes sitting in front of them, is really difficult as well. So in principle, this is a fantastic, and could be a game changer, I will say this, but only if it's invested in properly and not spread too thin.
So 5 million, as you say, pilot provision of counselling at primary school level. It is intended that the pilot will commence September 23. So there's mixed messages there. Is it counselling or is it counselling, right? So it's not available to everybody. You would have to ask for it or deemed suitable for it.
There's a lot of sketchiness on the detail. But in principle, great idea. And we, you know, we're very critical of people when they get it wrong. So if there's something that they're actually doing that I think is good, I think we should say, on the money here. Right. This could be good.
Right, this came in for you. Coleman, I have an only child who is smart but always had difficult behaviour. These days, he won't go to school. We don't know why. He just says he can't be bothered. We have said everything to him about his future, etc., but he does not seem to care. He says he's probably depressed. He likes going out with his friends but won't go to bed at night and is always tired in the morning. We've brought him to the doctor who doesn't see any sign of depression. I cut his Wi-Fi when he's not at school and I'm on the verge of cancelling his music apps and phone. We're on a waiting list for counselling. Please give advice. Now, it doesn't give an age there.
Yeah, the age is tricky. If it's a kind of a primary school child, I think you probably have more influence over that. I think it's a teenager.
I can assume it's a teenager there. Yeah.
Well, again, I would say, and I've been around loads of schools in the recent weeks and months, and absenteeism is a huge issue. You can't get young people back into school. Maybe a hangover from pandemic, you know, where they were told school isn't necessary, but principals telling me huge problems with absenteeism, right, and really struggles with school refusal. I don't like that term, but that's the
school refusal.
So children, again, whether that's not willing to go to school or not able, that's a really important distinction to make. You know, and again, how difficult to do.
Yeah.
Again, perhaps I wonder if there's been boundaries in place with this child all the way through, and maybe this is an extension of difficult behaviour, because we do need firm boundaries, like in terms of school is not a negotiable, it's an expectation. But if you're making a child and bring them to the GP where the GP saw no signs of depressive issues, that's good. That's a relief. But from a behavioural point of view, there has to be kind of some degree of sanction and an expectation that the child does something that's uncomfortable. And I think sometimes we can be very eggshelly about that in terms of not pushing children in that situation. But if it is a case of being unwilling, that's what's required. It is that kind of arm around the shoulder, but a nudge nonetheless in that way. If he's unable, and there is, but usually children will be able to identify it's the work, it's the teacher, it's the peers, but if it's I just want to stay at home.
End of term this week, right, for secondary schools. So what advice would you give to this parent about the new term? Should they be talking about it nearly from now and saying, we will be expecting you to go to school in September, these are the rules, blah, 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 so the child can internalise this over the next 3 months?
And again, if he's an older teen, and maybe there's a kind of a post-junior cert, it's you're not staying at home. If you're not going to school, you're going to get a job, or there's going to be a plan B in place. Yes. But absolutely having firm boundaries around what is expected of him, and what you will do should those things not be lived up to. You know, it shouldn't be an option to stay at home.
Okay, right. Yeah. Well, good luck with that in your lead. Coleman, any guidance from Coleman on mobile phones? I have a 12, nearly 13-year-old daughter in sixth class. Only a handful in her class haven't yet got a mobile phone. She's telling me she feels left out, as nearly everyone has one and they'll all be keeping in touch, but she can't and she hasn't got one. I'm holding off as I feel too much access to social media too young isn't a good thing. Any guidance? Of course, last week we heard that Greystones, all the schools in Greystones had got together and agreed that they wouldn't have any mobile phones, all the primary schools. So it was parents, teachers, school management, the whole thing. And it needs that sort of concerted effort, doesn't it?
It does, because in this situation, and like many, it'll be the peer pester power around, I'm the only one without it. And as a parent, most parents, 90% of parents give a phone with trepidation. It's against their better judgment, but they feel that they have to, for every reason that this parent is saying it. In terms of sixth class, to get to that point is good. You know, you've done well to hold off to this point. There is a kind of a natural assumption that it's almost like part of your confirmation that you get a phone now as part of that, and a rite of passage into secondary school. So maybe there is a time to introduce it, but I would always say, you know, it is introducing it with high levels of surveillance and supervision, because you're starting out a habit with this young person that they're going to carry into the next number of years.
I see the chief medical officer in America, I think her name is Murthy, has issued a report on social media and mobile phone use, and it's not good. Mm. And one of the things she says, which is interesting, because the tech companies say there's no evidence to connect poor mental health to social media and the use of phones. And what the chief medical officer is saying, well, there's no evidence to the contrary.
Yeah. And this is why this is so difficult, because it is a social experiment.
Yes. You know, and we're in just, the middle of it.
It's only 14 years old. The iPhone is only 14 years old. That was the game changer in terms of having handheld technology. So if you think the iPhone baby is only 14 now, you're really only starting to see the fallout of that. Throw in a pandemic in the middle of that as well, and you're
but your common sense would tell you that it's harmful.
It is, but I think we concentrate on this kind of the cyberbullying and the pornography, and actually having to answer 16 WhatsApp messages before your Cocoa Pops in the morning. That's too much for a 12-year-old as well. Do you know what I mean?
And he's obviously, I'm not saying, but the teenager that was in the previous email, he's probably on social media until 2 o'clock in the morning. Then he's tired in the morning, doesn't want to go to school,
and sleep is a huge issue. But just for that parent, introduce carefully. Remember buying and mobile phones like buying a puppy. The work only starts then.
Right. You know. I'm currently going through really bad anxiety with menopause, and my poor 13-year-old boys are also going through a lot. It's like I'm always on flight or fight or flight mode, and they're always grumpy, which really makes me feel worse. Any advice? And I'm sure that happens in a lot of households where with adolescence and menopause, you know, clash.
Yeah, I mean, again, you've got to give yourself some empathy in this situation. Do you know what I mean? In terms of this lady herself is struggling, and it's almost important that you own your own struggle and, you know, say, be open about that with the your sons and say, look, I'm not feeling 100% at the moment. I'm struggling, and I would really help. It would really help me if you could help me out a little bit. It's absolutely okay to ask for that bit of a buy-in. It almost encourages them to have a sense of responsibility. But self-compassion here, like in terms of you have to, self-care is really important in this situation. Like burning yourself out by trying to keep everything going is not going to.
It'd be great to think that those conversations could be had, but I don't know if we've hit that yet. You know,
From the menopause point of view, I think we're certainly up there. It's far more of a conversation now than it has.
I know,
been
but
before.
With a 13-year-old boy, probably.
You'd be surprised. 13-year-old boys can take on an awful lot more than we give them credit for. I think sometimes teenage boys are incredibly much more emotionally able than, and they're probably just not given the opportunity to be able to do that. But if you request someone to buy in and help me out with something, you're far more likely to get a better buy in than saying, this has to stop.
Yes.
Because.
Yes.
Then you're seeing it as a
we're
kind of
all in
battle.
This together. Yeah. I'm feeling this way. You're feeling that way. Blah,
and
blah,
it
blah.
Does work. Like all the evidence would suggest, incentives work better than you know, nagging.
Yes.
You
know? The carrot works better than the rod, or whatever the expression is. Have we got time for this? My 2-year-old doesn't listen, and when I say don't throw your bowl, don't throw water, don't touch this or that, I also have a baby, and she throws things. She doesn't take no for an answer. I'd love to know how to get her to listen. So there's two there, Joanna.
Yeah, there's a great suggestion.
Sorry, I've only 25 seconds. And I know, sorry, Joanna, about this. But.
Don't say, don't do that, don't do this, because you just put suggestions in their head what to do.
Right.
So reward them for not throwing the bowl rather than telling them not to throw it at
so
you.
So reward good behaviour.
Yeah,
there
but don't put suggestions, plant suggestions in their head about.
Don't think of the big white bear.
Exactly.
Polar bear, yeah. Okay, Colm and Octor, thanks so much. Colm will be back in a few weeks' time. That's it from us. Cormac is on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening. Sunny Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.